Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where two Asian American women share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Taeun.
I'm Sophia.
We've been in a long-distance friendship for 9 years, and we never went to the same school or lived in the same city. And our podcast has been a really fun way for us to keep in touch and to process new challenges that we take on or find ourselves in.
And Facebook notified us this week that we've been Facebook friends for 9 years. And I think what helped us stay in touch all these years, despite never going to the same school or living in the same city, is that we actually have a lot in common, given like values and interests. And we even did an episode where we tried to debate something and we ended up realizing we had a lot of things that in agreement that, and it ended up not being a fun debate between the two of us, if anything. So we had to bring in two other friends who make the debate spicier.
Yes, but this all changed when Taeun, you proposed the idea for this episode, and we realized that probably the biggest difference between us is that I only read nonfiction books, and you, I wouldn't say only read, but you definitely focus and enjoy more of fiction books, mm-hmm. which means that our listeners are going to be in for a treat. I imagine there will be some pretty funny differences in perspective that will come out as we talk about how to enjoy reading, either fiction or nonfiction.
Yes, and I'm sure that lots of our listeners probably have been avid readers when they were younger, but as we've grown older, entered adulthood, and also been met with a lot of obligations and priorities, reading probably has fell to the wayside, and maybe it's been a struggle to get yourself reading again. So we hope that this can be an episode where you learn some tips and tricks of how to enjoy reading. And in this episode, you'll definitely be hearing me and Sophia learning from each other about how to better enjoy fiction and nonfiction books. So given that, I think it might be good for us to start off with our favorite books. Sophia, what are some of your favorite fiction books?
I don't remember. I feel like I remember reading fiction books in high school that I really enjoyed, like Great Gatsby, for example. But that's about it. I don't think I've actually read fiction books like on my own, unless it's like for a podcast episode.
But well, I mean, let's take the ones from podcast episodes. Which ones have you liked?
I enjoyed Abigail Heng-Wen's book, and also Sarah Suk's book, Troublemaker.
Mm-hmm. I would say, so I have a couple of favorite fiction books, so this can also serve as like a little recommendation for folks. So the one I always talk about is the Percy Jackson series by Rick Riordan. A big update, they actually just finished casting the main trio for the Disney Plus show, and that's been really exciting news and has me revisiting the series again. It's very elementary, middle, high school friendly, but it's still a fun read for me that I continue to revisit over the years. The other books that I love are The Shadow of the Fox trilogy by Julie Kagawa. This is a more recent find through our good friend Hillary from Hillary Reads Books, and it has all of the fantasy adventure aspects that I love in books, and it also centers Japanese mythology. And so this was a really fun read, and it was nice and refreshing to find something that I was engaged in the whole way across several books. Another book that I recommend is Picture Us in the Light by Kelly Lloyd Gilbert. I really love Kelly Lloyd Gilbert's writing because she oftentimes centers Bay Area Asian Americans, which I feel like you don't get to see a lot in book form. And so this one is kind of like a bunch of different genres in one. It's like coming of age, high school romance, suspense, thriller, all at the same time. And so if you're kind of curious what that means, you definitely should check out that book. And the last one I would recommend is A Thousand Beginnings and Endings, which is actually an anthology. It's a collection of short stories that are inspired by Asian myths and folktales. So they bring together a bunch of different Asian American or Asian diasporic authors to kind of reinvent the wheel and retell a myth or a folktale that they grew up hearing about. And they have like a little epilogue for each one, which explains what the original myth was and what kind of inspiration they took to write their new version of it. So
it's fun to hear your favorite fiction books. I can see them make their way into the films that you make as well, because a lot of the themes that are popular in these books or are central to these books are also themes in your films.
What about nonfiction? I know this is your territory, Sophia.
I read a lot of nonfiction, but I wouldn't say I love every single nonfiction book that I read. And that's actually something that I love about nonfiction, is that I think I can get a lot out of the book without reading the whole thing or loving the whole thing. Some nonfiction books I really like are 1, Think Again by Adam Grant, 2, The Art of Gathering with Priya Parker, and 3, Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China. Yeah, I read that a long time ago, and it just explained so much about my mom's perspective as someone who grew up in China and then moved to the US in her 30s.
I've heard you talk about that book quite a few times in our outside conversations. Can you give us a quick little summary about what Think Again and The Art of Gathering are?
Yes, so Think Again is all about the power of knowing what you don't know. It gives you tips for learning how to question your own opinions and how to open other people's minds to a different opinion. I'll read a little bit of the summary. Intelligence is usually seen as the ability to think and learn, but in a rapidly changing world, there's another set of cognitive skills that might matter more, the ability to rethink and unlearn. In our daily lives, too many of us favor the comfort of conviction over the discomfort of doubt. We listen to opinions that make us feel good instead of ideas that make us think hard. We see disagreement as a threat to our egos rather than an opportunity to learn. We surround ourselves with people who agree with our conclusions when we should be gravitating towards those who challenge our thought process. The result is that our beliefs get brittle long before our bones. We think too much like preachers defending our sacred beliefs, prosecutors proving the other side wrong, and politicians campaigning for approval. And we think too little like scientists searching for truth. Intelligence is no cure, and it can even be a curse. Being good at thinking can make us worse at rethinking. The brighter we are, the blinder to our own limitations we can become. One really fun takeaway from this book has to do with how to convince someone to open their mind to a different perspective. So if you got to choose between sharing 2 strong arguments for an idea versus sharing the same 2 strong arguments plus a third weaker argument, you might assume that the latter approach is more effective, right? Because you're giving them 3 points. Yes, one might be weaker, but there's still 3 distinct points. But something surprising that Adam Grant shared is that it's actually more effective to have fewer but stronger points than more points that might be weaker, just because the weaker point actually casts doubt on the other 2 points that might be very strong. And I also love The Art of Gathering, and I'll read the description of the book. In The Art of Gathering, Priya Parker argues that the gatherings in our lives are lackluster and unproductive, which they don't have to be. We rely too much on routine and the conventions of gatherings, where we should focus on distinctiveness and the people involved. At a time when coming together is more important than ever, Parker sets forth a human-centered approach to gathering that will help everyone create meaningful, memorable experiences, large and small, for work and for play. Drawing on her expertise as a facilitator of high-powered gatherings around the world, Parker takes us inside events of all kinds to show what works, what doesn't, and why. She investigates a wide array of gatherings: conferences, meetings, a courtroom, a flash mob party, an Arab-Israeli summer camp, and explains how simple, specific changes can invigorate any group experience.
These all sound like really great books that I would love to check out later. This was interesting because I wonder, Sophia, do you count memoirs as nonfiction? Because I feel like in a way there are 2 nonfiction categories for me, and memoirs actually almost read like fiction. And so maybe that's why we have been able to talk about memoirs a little bit more on the podcast with like Know My Name by Chanel Miller. Mm. But a couple of memoirs that I really love are Born a Crime by Trevor Noah, which talks all about his upbringing in South Africa during the apartheid. And then They Called Us Enemy by George Takei. That one is a graphic novel of his experience growing up during the 1900s and going into Japanese internment camps. And so that's a really, really powerful read. Some of the non-memoir, non-fiction recommendations that I have that are my favorites are Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, pretty much all about vulnerability. And so it was really cool to just read a whole book about a quality and a trait that I personally take a lot of pride in. And then we've talked about this already, but we've talked about Atomic Habits by James Clear in a recent episode, all about habits and how you can use habits to change your lifestyle. And the last one I would recommend is Craft in the Real World by Matthew Solises. He is a Korean-American adoptee, and pretty much it's a whole book critiquing the world of fiction writing from the lens of a POC. So that one was really cool because that kind of like blew my mind by sharing with me the rules of writing that have been taught over the decades and centuries and kind of subverting them and introducing his own rules that he would choose to use in his workshops.
Okay, so I'm someone who does not read fiction ever, unless like a friend is reading it and encouraging me to read it. So I want to hear all about your perspective. Like, Why do you love reading fiction? Do you tend to read the entire book? How do you decide if you want to commit to reading a book? Pitch me. Why
do
you
love reading? Why do I love reading? I want to hear it. Okay, so for me, the purpose of reading is escapism and to feel engulfed in a story to the point where I don't put down the book. That's always my most memorable moments in my upbringing, where I'm kind of like hiding under the covers, where I was told to go to sleep, but I'm reading this book that I had checked out from the library. To your question about do you always finish books, I always finish a book from beginning to end. Like, I feel really shitty for not finishing a book. And we'll get into this later when you talk about the reasons why you love nonfiction. But a funny tidbit for this is actually that I felt kind of weird not reading all of Goodbye Again by Johnny Sun, which we did a whole episode about. Like, I obviously loved snippets I read a lot, but I don't think I can say with good faith that I like the book when I haven't read the whole book. And so that's when I discovered sort of our reading differences, because you were the one who was like, oh, let me just send you some snippets from the book that you can kind of reference. I also see books very similarly to film and TV. I love the feeling of being on the edge of my seat and wondering how everything is going to unfold. And so I've had many moments where something unbelievable happens and the author, you know, like chooses to go to that unbelievable scenario. And I am able to like reread again and again that paragraph, that page, and really see it in my head. It's not the same feeling as film and TV where you have to scrub 10 seconds back to relive the whole thing. And so I like how you can kind of adjust the pacing at which you read books, which you can't really do with film and TV. And that's the main reason why I would prefer books over TV. I can skim if I need to. That happens when I'm like so excited about a book that my eyes are just kind of like flying to know what's next. Or I can really sit with each word, like in the instance I mentioned earlier. And on the topic of film and TV, I actually don't particularly like to use my brain for books, which I think is another big difference between us. I already use my brain a lot for when I watch films and TV, like what themes do they bring up, what techniques do they use to motivate the story. And so books have kind of become my escapism that film and TV is for a lot of other folks. So those are some of the biggest reasons why I've grown to enjoy reading fiction again in the most recent years.
I wonder if a reason that I don't find fiction as enjoyable is maybe I just don't have a very vivid imagination of like reading a book and being able to picture a scene. I imagine that if I don't read fiction very much, it's probably hard for me to really conjure up a really compelling scene in my mind that engrosses me in the book and compels me to keep going.
I mean, I guess with like your imagination, when you talk about like features you would like to see in products or types of technologies that you would like to see, I do kind of feel like they stem from very practical situations, right? Which is the whole point of working in tech. It's to make people's lives more convenient. And I always felt like that was a struggle for me. I much prefer thinking of ideas that are just like very daydreamy and just like, what if the world was kind of like this and this and this way? It's never going to happen, but I let my mind wander to that extreme just to kind of see like, oh, what would kind of the consequences and implications of this type of world look like for folks?
I think I have a lot more imagination for visual arts and for music. Like, you know, I can hear a melody and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many possibilities of like where this could go and like how we can add a harmony to it. But for fiction, like I just even think about the fiction books that I read for the podcast and like I enjoyed them, but I imagine if I was reading them using your brain, I probably would have enjoyed them more.
Okay, I want to hear about why it's hard for you to enjoy fiction books.
Okay, I think I'm really impatient with reading books and really impatient with movies too. And so if I feel like the buildup is really slow or I'm not drawn in right away, I will be frustrated and I will drop the book. And so one thing I struggle with is like, I don't really trust book blurbs to give me a good idea about whether I'll like the book. If I like trust a blurb and I start reading it and it's like really slow and not going anywhere, I get really annoyed. And so I think it's like that feeling that
I really... Do you have
like,
an example of a book where you read the book blurb, was really intrigued, and then it just was a very slow buildup?
You know, I will say that happens with nonfiction as well. You know, you have such like a compelling blurb and you read the book and you're like, okay, this is not that groundbreaking. Like, this isn't that mind-blowing. But I'm curious, like, for you, when you learn about a new fiction book and you're interested, what percentage of books that catch your eye do you actually end up reading?
I feel like I try to read as close to 100% of the ones that pique my interest. It's just a matter of the availability at libraries and stuff. The other thing I will say with fiction books for myself is that I don't try to reinvent the wheel in terms of what I already know I like. So, for example, if I already know I'm a sucker for those middle school, high school, coming of age, rom-com-like books, I'll just keep reading those. Like, I don't care if it's a very similar template of a book to a classic that we've all read, but it's like different characters and different nuances and different writing styles too. And so I'm not really that picky about trying to diversify the types of plots or stories that I'm reading. So I kind of know like the staples. And so I guess one tip would be thinking about what themes excite you and then just going for those books that have that theme. So for me, a big theme that I really like is kids as main characters and mythology or a high school drama. Those are, I think, are the three things that I can always go through the whole book. Even if I don't enjoy it, I'll probably still probably read till the end because it keeps me hooked for until the very end. I also think about themes in film and TV that I like that might also be in book form. And so I feel like there's, especially right now, we talked about with the Kim Chingu's how there's a lot of Korean tropes in a way that are being asked for in books like K-pop and K-dramas. And so if I know that there's like a particular type of K-drama that I like and it's kind of being referenced as inspiration for the book, I feel like I would probably like that book too.
Okay, that's a great tip for helping you narrow down and have more success with the books you end up picking up. Okay, for people who are intrigued, maybe they have a fiction book in their mind that they're trying to commit to, what are some of your tips for helping people follow through and, you know, get to reading that book?
Yes, so I have a two-part tip. So the first one is making a habit of reading. So again, look at Atomic Habits by James Clear. I personally like to set aside time before I go to bed to read. So I either set a time expectation or a number of pages expectations. So for example, I might set the habit of I have to read at least one chapter before I go to bed. And this actually is good for other reasons, like it forces you to get off your phone and to, you know, get your eyes adjusted and away from screen so that you are more likely to fall asleep. And I find that I also have an easier time falling asleep after reading a book. With that habit, I don't book hop. I think book hopping can sometimes make it confusing, like what stories are separate and just what events are part of which story. It's kind of like if you watch a lot of shows at the same time, you kind of lose track of what had just happened. So for me, if I make a habit of reading, I'm committed to the same book until it's done or until I run out of the 3-week hold that I have on the book. And then third tip would be I look out for friends' recommendations. So not only is it personally endorsed, but it also makes for a conversation once you finish the book. So this is, again, kind of treating the book like a film or show. So when, you know, the question that you'd ask, like, oh, have you watched the latest popular film? Or have you watched the new show that just came out? I think that kind of conversation can be really exciting because you then get to talk about the overarching themes that you really like, and you also know, oh, this person gave me a really good rec. I can keep relying on this person for the types of recommendations they have and know that that would fit my palette of books that I like to read. So I know a lot of people use Goodreads. I personally don't use it because I don't really want to add another social network into my palette of social media networks, but I know a lot of people use Goodreads, and that's a really great way for people to keep in touch with what people are reading. And I think a lot of celebrities also use it too. So it can be a good way. I think it can be a good way for you to learn what books are on people's radars rather than relying on like the New York Times bestsellers or a popularized list that you might hear about. But I'm excited to hear about what gets you reading nonfiction, because I have a lot of things to say about why it's hard for me to enjoy nonfiction.
Yeah, for me, I love nonfiction to the point where you've often like recommended books or movies to me and you're like, oh my gosh, this is only like this show is only 3 hours long total. And to me, that just feels like a huge amount of time. I'm like, I can't sit in front of Netflix and watch it for 3 hours. I just don't have a habit of watching Netflix. Mm-hmm. But if someone recommends a book, I can download it right away and finish it that night and like not even think about it at all. And mm-hmm. like it doesn't even register in my mind that I just like spent 3 hours reading it. To me, the purpose of reading is learning information and advice that can improve my life. When I think about escapism, I guess I might turn to like cute Korean dramas for that. But I think in general, if I'm having a hard time in life with something, rather than like escaping it or trying to experience something else, I actually turn to books to figure out how to fix that problem. Like, am I stressed? Okay, let's go read a book about how to like get rid of my stress. Or like, am I dissatisfied at work? Am I conflicted about a friendship? Am I trying to find my passion in life? Okay, I'm gonna go read a book and like, you know, find advice that can improve my life. It's a very practical motivation. Other thing about reading nonfiction is that I think I really enjoy how there's a decently linear relationship between the time I spend reading the book and the amount of concrete learning I get from the book. You know, I don't feel like I need to read till the end to start learning things along the way that I can apply. Whereas for me, for fiction, I feel like, yes, I can enjoy it along the way, but a lot of the satisfaction might come at the end when everything's all wrapped up. And for me, like, I might just not have the patience for that. Mm-hmm. In terms of talking to friends, I often find it easier to talk to friends about nonfiction than fiction because from my perspective, instead of needing to share like the context of the story, like the characters and the plot, I can just share a very isolated piece of context and information and like share that interesting tidbit. Like, for example, when you asked me about Think Again, I could very quickly explain that takeaway of like, you know, when you're making an argument, lean on two strong reasons rather than two strong reasons and one weaker reason, right? It was like very fast for me to explain. And I found that with my close friends and my partner, for most of the situations, I like can't really think of the last time that someone else has brought up a fiction book to me. Because I don't really think my other...
I have to roast you for this. I always bring up fiction books to you.
You're the only one. You're the only one.
Yes.
Like, everyone else, I can't think of the last time... I don't think any of my other friends read fiction. And so they haven't brought it up.
So do they also read the same nonfiction books as you do?
They read, well, I would say a lot of my friends who read a lot are in tech and have that very product manager mindset where it's they read tech blogs. Mm. Yeah, I'm also kind of back to that whole impatience thing. I enjoy that when I'm reading a nonfiction book, I can skip around really easily and just read the books and read the snippets that I like.
I think this is so interesting to talk about the differences because I knew you to be someone who read a lot. Were you the one who gifted me that book about Christianity? I forget what it was called.
It was a book I read in like a religious studies class.
Yeah.
That I thought was so interesting.
Yeah. So it's funny because you gifted me that book. And then a couple years ago, I ordered you Pachinko because I had just read it. I don't think I ever finished the Christianity book. And to my knowledge, I don't think you've read Pachinko.
No, I have not read Pachinko.
Yeah. Okay. So let me tell you my biggest struggle with nonfiction books, specifically the type that are not memoir books. Mm-hmm. I personally feel like they talk in circles. They'll have chapters that are like, this is kind of similar to chapter two, but it's different in this very slightly nuanced way that I honestly don't really think needed a whole separate chapter to talk about it. And so as someone who tends to read books all the way through, I get really demotivated when I run into chapters like that. So that's one thing. And then another habit that I technically don't have, but I know you have, is I never, ever annotate a book. I think it's sacrilegious. And this is probably because I grew up not really buying books and only going to the library. And I just never had the patience to like annotate something and then erase it before I returned the book. And so fiction lends itself much more readily to leisure reading versus nonfiction, in which it might be a good idea for me to be like annotating and taking notes so that it sticks better in my head. The kind of the way like you were able to pull out that one example really quickly. And with that aspect of annotating and taking notes, nonfiction feels like a textbook, honestly, to me. So how do you not space out in a textually dense paragraph? You may not have an answer for this, but I'd be very curious, like, how you make sure you glean practical learnings from a book that can maybe feel like a textbook to someone else.
I would say there's a lot of nonfiction books that I haven't enjoyed because, again, the writing style is very circular or the takeaways are very unclear. In terms of approaching a really dense paragraph, If it's like getting boring, I'll just skip ahead to the next chapter. Chapters don't necessarily really build on themselves, and I'm okay not getting like the full deep argument for something, like, as long as I like get interesting snippets along the way.
So your tip is kind of actually to not be afraid to jump around the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever keep track of like what chapters you didn't finish reading or the ones you did finish reading? Because that also seems like a lot of work for me.
Oh, if I didn't like it and I skipped it, too bad, I'm not going back.
Okay.
There's no need to.
Yeah, well, do you then feel like you can say you liked a book if you skipped around and mm-hmm. not read all the chapters?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is like the percentage of like the book you would have had to read in order to say that you liked the book?
Probably 60-70%.
Okay, gotcha. And speaking of which, how do you smartly pick out the snippets that you do want to read, especially on a first read? Like, I feel like these are books that you can return to and, like you said, go back to look at the snippets that you are very interested in. But how do you kind of, like, use your time smartly and wisely on a book like that if you don't intend on reading the whole thing?
One thing I do is I look at the table of contents just to see how much of it the author would consider as, like, setup and versus how much of it is more, like, of the meat of the book. I would also try to read the first, maybe like one or two chapters. First chapter is tough because first chapter tends to be like uncharacteristic of the rest of the book. Maybe I would like try to read the first two or three chapters or so, because I find that the second and third chapter kind of gives you an idea of what the structure of the other chapters might be like. And so if you're like, okay, this author like is super slow at the beginning, but then the last two paragraphs are pretty good, I might just skip around and read the last two paragraphs. Or I might also just go online, read a review, and see what sections stood out the most to people. And then I'll go back in the book and then just read those sections for myself.
Oh, okay. So you kind of also rely on recommendations from other people, but not just of the book, but of sections of the book that would intrigue you. Interesting. Do you have other tips for people like me who struggle to enjoy nonfiction?
One tip is similar to yours of like talking about the book with a friend, but think of someone who is also interested in this topic, and if you want to be held accountable, you can let them know, like, hey, I'm reading this book, like, I'll tell you about it afterwards. And so there's a little bit of peer pressure to, like, tell them something.
Okay.
Or you can also think of it as, like, you don't need to read the entire book. Maybe it's just, I'm going to read until I've learned five interesting things from this book, and then you can put it down.
Okay.
And then after you learn those five interesting things, you can tell a friend about it or write it down for yourself.
Those are really helpful tips. To end this conversation, maybe based on the things that we just shared about struggles or joys of reading particular books, maybe we can each recommend each other a book. And I follow up on that later. So, Sophia, what is a nonfiction book that you would recommend to me?
I would recommend The Art of Gathering, because I think you would be interested in that topic of how to bring friends together and create like a really unique and meaningful atmosphere. One example from the book is that she was talking about, oh, when you're like deciding the venue for your event, often people are like, oh, it's going to happen at my house, or it's going to happen at like, you know, a pretty building somewhere. And she's like, there's so much meaning that can be found in just the location of the event. Imagine if you wanted to host like a college reunion and your goal was to get people to reflect on their mortality and really take life in their hands and go forth and do something that they're maybe a little bit afraid of doing. What if you hosted that college reunion at a cemetery? You just had people stand there next to all the gravestones looking at people who've now passed away and don't have a chance to make their dreams come true.
That's kind of like that escapism, like daydreaming, like thinking of like very outlandish ideas that I like.
It's a very creative book, so I think you would like it. And secondly, if I remember correctly, the book is divided into chapters that are very distinct. So it's like, how do you pick the venue of the event? How do you pick the theme of the event? And so you can skip around pretty easily. And it's stuff that you can probably pretty easily apply to your life. And I think this book is interesting, and there are a lot of people in your life that I imagine you could talk to about the book, and they would find the takeaways interesting. And no pressure to read it all the way. Just read like two chapters or something.
Okay, sounds good. The other tip that I just want to emphasize that you mentioned was making use of the table of contents. So in a way, it's kind of like a textbook, because you don't have to read the whole textbook in order to do the curriculum. And I never, ever reference a table of contents in fiction. And so I've always kind of thought like, oh, this is kind of interesting that they spend a lot of time making the table of contents. It takes up, you know, 2 to 3 pages in a book. But it actually sounds like for nonfiction, the table of contents can be a really great outline for you to start from in order to know where to start in the book. Well, from my favorite books of fiction, I would recommend A Thousand Beginnings and Endings because they are a collection of short stories, so you do not need to read the whole thing. And also, I believe, if I remember correctly, the table of contents for this one would actually tell you the author's names, too. And so you can kind of get a sense of, like, what ethnicity they are and what cultural background they're from. And so you can even pick which folktale or myth you would be most interested in learning about. So let's say, like, you're primarily only interested in learning about Chinese mythology. You could just target the ones that are about Chinese mythology. And you, like, they also vary in length. So, like, some of them are, like, 4 pages long. Some of them are, like, 20 pages long, and so you can really play around with that and not feel pressure to read the whole thing.
That is a very great recommendation tailored for someone like me.
We were able to successfully find recommendations for each other. And again, for this one, you don't need to finish the whole thing either. You can just read like 2 stories.
Yay!
I hope that everyone was able to learn maybe like 1 or 2 new tips about reading. Let us know if 1, you're more of a fiction or nonfiction reader. And 2, if you have other tips, definitely let us know. You can comment on our Instagram post. You can find us on Instagram at Bamboo and Glass or DM us there. We also have Buy Me a Coffee. So in case any of this was interesting, insightful for you, and you would like to pay it forward, we have that link available and you can treat us to a coffee or boba.
Before we end, we wanted to share some community shoutouts. So on our Instagram page at Bamboo and Glass, we recently created a post asking people to comment and give shoutouts to other people who they think are doing really awesome work. So I'll start with the first one. Hillary Reads Books says, going to give some love to at Back to Backlist, who has been hosting #ReadingHawaii and sharing so many amazing resources. And Christine wanted to share some love to Tony Hua. Tony has been my cheerleader, supporter, personal chef, driver, and best friend. Thank you for always being my listening ear. Now, this is your sign to finally start a podcast with me.
And with that, we thank you for joining us for this episode, and we hope to talk to y'all next time. Bye!